You're listening to Augmented Humanity. Our guests are modern explorers working at the intersection of technology and the humanities. They help us to understand ourselves and the worlds we create in this digital age. They are thinkers, creators, makers, and academics, working in diverse fields like geography, the visual arts, performing arts, storytelling, and literature. I'm your host, Craig Goldsmith.
I'm your host, Ellen Dornan.
On this program, we're joined by Ryan Flahive. Ryan is the archivist at the Institute of American Indian Arts, IAIA, and teaches at IAIA's Museum Studies Department. He currently serves on the New Mexico Historical Records Advisory Board, the New Mexico Association of Museums Executive Board, and the National Advisory Council of the Association of Tribal Archives, Libraries, and Museums. Ryan is also the editor of Celebrating Difference, 50 Years of Contemporary Native Arts at IAIA, 1962 to 2012, and The Sound of Drums, a memoir of Lloyd Kiva New. He is also co-curator for current exhibit Experimental Expression, Printmaking at IAIA 1963 to 1981 at the IAIA Museum of Contemporary Native Arts in Santa Fe.
Thanks so much for talking with us today, Ryan. You've talked a little bit about some of the tribal archives, and I know that you're on the Historic Records Commission. How do you see your archive being different from these other archives? And how do you think the stories that can be told are a little bit different than, say, a tribal archive or a historical museum archive?
It all comes down to the type of organization creating the records and maintaining the records. So IAIA is a established school. It's an academic institution. So the stuff that happens here happens with official channels through governmental accreditation, congressional appropriations. You know, those are the official things that are covered in our archive. When you go to a tribal archive, they have sets of records that are created by the tribe. So they have records of their economic side. They have records of their tribal government. They have records of all the committees of the tribal government. Those are working in a very self-governmental fashion, so they have their own laws to follow. So they're going to be used in a different way. They're not quite as public as IAIA. IAIA is a public nonprofit institution, whereas a tribal government has certain inalienable rights to restrict the access to those archives. Even if it is something as simple as minutes from a meeting, tribal governments have the right to restrict anything that relates strictly to their culture and to their operation. Whereas IAIA, we're focused on art. We're focused on the history of this school, the history of the contemporary Native art movement, which basically runs from the 1950s to present. Art is a commercial enterprise, and you know, we're teaching people to be fine artists, to go out and earn a living as an artist. So there's some very different things that go on between an institutional archive and something created by the tribe.
Even aside from the art focus, in a way, the IAIA archives are personal, because each chunk of archive material really relates to that individual rather than some of these cultural memory archives that really relate to a tribe or a larger community or a geographical group or an ethnic group.
And that jives with one of our founding core values, which is individualized expression. You know, before IAIA was created, the stereotypical Native art was of communal dance scenes, communal hunting scenes. You know, it was all based out of communal concepts. This is something we've talked about ad nauseum in our classes. What is traditional versus contemporary? I don't have that answer. But what I see in the work is that traditional forms of Native art really have a community focus. The work that came out of IAIA was very individualized. The 1960s was a time of individualized empowerment, and that's what you see in our work. So it's interesting that you see that, Craig, that there's these personal individualized contexts that have to be taken into consideration. As something that's very important to our school is that idea of individual expression, which was really suppressed. Up until 1962, Native students were told, do not express yourself as a Native person. You know, suppress your religion, suppress your language. We embraced all of it and said, be who you want to be. Be proud of who you are and express who you are through your work.
I had a question about how the purpose and structure of your archives fed into the decision about which platform you ultimately use. The IAI's digital collections are part of the New Mexico Digital Collections at University of New Mexico, right? Which is also part of the Rocky Mountain Online Archive, which is a regional finding guide. And so how did that decision get made?
When I got here in 2009, we didn't have any structure to deliver anything. You know, we had our website, but to deliver digital images on a website on static pages where you keep using the back button is just lame, right? It's just super lame. And so I had to find something else. I'm a huge believer in consortiums. So the first thing I did was look for consortiums. Consortiums are usually meant for smaller institutions with less resources and fewer budgets. So New Mexico's Digital Collections and RMOA allow for smaller institutions with fewer resources to get their stuff online at no cost. In the end, the no cost piece was the biggest piece. Being able to have UNM absorb the cost of the servers, the software licenses, and all the upkeep and upgrades was huge. And they still do that for us. And that's why the New Mexico Historical Records Advisory Board, we've been working very closely with the folks at UNM to try to integrate New Mexico Digital Collections and Rocky Mountain Online Archive into these grants that are coming in. Because for institutions to digitize stuff and not have a place to put it, it kind of defeats the purpose. So we're trying to build in this relationship where, okay, so if Silver City Museum wants to digitize 300 photos, well, they need to be talking to New Mexico's Digital Collections and being able to put them up on ContentDM. Now, ContentDM is the software owned and managed by OCLC. It is kind of the industry standard.
OCLC?
Yeah, OCLC is a giant library software company, basically controls all the library software out there, at least most of it. It's an industry standard. It's what we call a digital access management system. It's clunky, but it works. We're going to start moving away from it. And this is my little plug for the Research Center for Contemporary Native Art. The newest thing that's happening on our campus is the archives and the museum collection is streamlining into one operation. Because one thing we've heard from our patrons is that we want to see the artwork and the archives in the same place at the same time in the same search.
And cross-referenced in the whole bit.
Yeah. In the library world, it's called linked data. Linked data is the future of any kind of searches. We're moving towards a product called Proficio Elements, which is made by Rediscovery Software. We've been in it for about a month, and we'll be able to provide access to art and archives in the same search at the same time. So if somebody's researching T.C. Cannon, they'll find all the T.C. Cannon works, they'll find his report card, they might find photographs of him all in the same search. The way it is right now, you have to go to two different databases, maybe even three different databases. I'm working in a back-end database right now called Archive Space. The museum collection is working in a FileMaker Pro program. So for years and years, we've been talking about consolidating our catalogs into one catalog for ease of use. I mean, we're pretty much doing all the work that we want to do right now. So the decision to move towards Rediscovery Proficio Elements was the idea that it's really the only option out there to have archives and art in the same place. There are very few databases that can handle the data structures because archive data structures and metadata structures are very different from describing a painting or a sculpture.
A linked data search might be a thing where if I look up a particular artist and then get a particular piece of artwork, if you've got all this stuff in one place, then I might also turn up his sketchbook entries and diary entries from about the same time, or an audio recording of an interview he did, say, on a radio program that was from that same time period.
Yeah. Linked data structures are essentially replacing the old Library of Congress subject headings. Now, if you open up the first couple pages of a book, you're going to find underneath the copyright those Library of Congress subject headings. They're really kind of outdated. They're not as specific as they should be. Some of them are even offensive. They're awful. We don't use them anymore. It's more work for librarians, it's more work for me, it's more work for curators and collections managers. But being able to serve our patrons is the number one goal. It's not about the stuff, it's about our patrons. So making sure they can find stuff as easily as possible is our goal.
UNM provides the server space. So in a technical sense, all your data is actually living down on campus in Albuquerque, is that right?
My surrogates are. So what I do is I digitize here. I'll create all of my metadata in a spreadsheet, and then I jump onto their web portal, and I can do a batch upload of images and match it up to my spreadsheet. I always watermark my images to protect them. They're always low res. There's a pretty extensive rights management statement on there. And so the surrogates are hosted there. Everything else is here. Now that's going to become a legacy database for us once we get Rediscovery up, which, you know, should be happening hopefully by this fall. We hope to have our new database up and running, which is a huge, huge task for us to undertake. It's a very complex system, and we have other jobs to do besides this database work. Once that gets up and running, we won't be adding to New Mexico's digital collections anymore. We've always found Content DM to be clunky, but it was always our only option.
So you're sort of bringing it back in-house in that sense.
We're bringing it back in-house. The Rediscovery software and the website is hosted by Rediscovery in Virginia. Now, it's not all of our data. It's still just our surrogates. But for them to host the website and to host our data, and for us to say, okay, it's your responsibility. We're going to make sure you do all the backups. You take care of everything else. You do all the updates. That's the danger of using an open source piece of software like a Collective Access. Collective Access can do what we're talking about, offering museum and archive collections at the same time, but you have to maintain the software itself. You have to go and make all the open access changes. And so we didn't want to do that. In the end, all of our software decisions come back to what's the best way for us to deliver material to our patrons.
And there's something to be said for having some of the data not co-located with your physical facility.
Always, always.
What I'm understanding is on the public access side, you generally are not putting up high-res images or uncompressed audio and the like. Is that basically correct?
Yeah, that's true.
If you're hanging on to the actual high-res, uncompressed, perfect original data, do you have slim drives stashed at different places like around
Santa Fe? Yep, in my house. It's a minimum three backups. A best practice is you have your local, you have your hard drive on your desk, which is your backup copy, and then whatever you keep off site in case you have a fire. I have a hard drive that I back up at the end of every month, and it goes home with me, and I bring it back the next month and refresh it. That redundancy is the only way we can actually preserve our data.
You work with the executive committee of ATALM, right? So you do work with the Association of Tribal Archives, Libraries, and Museums. It sounds like what IAIA is doing is very cutting edge in terms of providing access and doing preservation work and doing the digitization and balancing different kinds of needs and concerns. Are you in a position where you can help increase capacity in these areas for all these other tribal schools, libraries, archives, and museums?
That's a great question. So ATALM, the Association of Tribal Archives, Libraries, and Museums, is a IMLS-funded organization. The IMLS funds were basically used for a conference, and that conference was to bring together across the continent the tribal archivists, curators, and librarians to talk about like problems, like issues. It had blown up to something that is so great because the first ATALM I went to in 2009 in Portland, there might have been 300 people there. The last one I went to in California last year, there were like 2,000 people there. The capacity is amazing. It's my favorite conference of the year. I'm not a big national conference guy. I like to stick to my local issues primarily. But when it comes to ATALM, it's such a powerful thing to see. You know, you have these Mohawk archivists and these Seminole archivists and these Osage archivists all talking about the same problems. Whether it's tribal support or lack of authority to go and collect, or the lack of space, or the lack of this and lack of that, it's the most rewarding thing for us as museum studies faculty, because we go back there and it's just this constant networking with all these different museums and curators looking for help. They're what I call accidental archivists. You know, they might have been working in a casino and they opened up the wrong closet that happened to be filled with archives, and now they're the archivist, right? They get stuck with the job because they're competent. So they come around, and that's a lot of my students in my archives class are working professionals exactly in the same situation that I just described. I taught completely on Zoom last semester, even before the pandemic. I had four archivists that were out of state working in tribal archives who had no training. It's the curators and librarians, too. There is a lack of training for people of color in this field that we need to change, that we need to diversify. There's lack of opportunity for that education, and that's something we're trying to change. Our museum studies department is really, I think, one of the key elements in being able to push that diversity forward. And something we've really tried to work on with ATOM, because this movement towards having more Native art curators in museums is big. It's huge. We need more Native art curators to be Native people.
And it makes me think of something one of our guests a couple of programs ago said, which is that libraries and librarians, curators and collections, archivists and archives really are positioned to be a kind of community center for the 21st century, that this is a place where community activity can happen, cultural memory can happen.
It almost becomes this very informal teaching session, you know, and it's ground level. You know, when you go to an AAM meeting, American Alliance of Museums, I don't like going to those because they don't talk about anything that relates to me. And it's not really problem solving. It's dog and pony shows and these kind of bigger, higher level things that Smithsonian and other well-funded institutions are doing. Whereas ATOM, we're talking about the janitor who happens to be the assistant librarian and trying to figure out how to work with Dewey. We're really breaking it down to a very fundamental skill level at ATOM and making sure that people have the skills to get the jobs done, because there isn't any other way.
Talk about a tide that lifts all boats. That's just really great.
Really interesting talking with you, Ryan, on this program. Thank you so much for taking the time to be with us.
You're very welcome. I really enjoyed speaking today. It's fun to talk about.
If you would like more information about the IAIA archives, you can visit iaia.edu/academics/library/archives. You have been listening to Augmented Humanity, which is a program of the New Mexico Humanities Council, produced in partnership with KUNM-FM. You can visit us online and find out more about our programs at nmhumanities.org. Our theme music comes courtesy James Whiten, and we've had production assistance from Tristan Klum.